Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 339 for comics originally released on February 5th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Green Lantern 28, or if you flip it over, Red Lanterns 28. It's a flip book. Normally, these things drive me up the wall. We kind of talked about a little of this off-air over recent weeks of how I was going to get a second issue so I could put it in with the both titles in my drawer boxes. I wasn't able to get a second copy. So at some point, I will have to do that.
It's going to drive you crazy.
Well, actually, what it's got the risk of is at some point, I'll have put it in with one of them, not find it, think my inventory's out of date, order the other one at a higher price because it'll be a back issue by then. It's the collector in me. So we've got two stories in here, and I want to talk a little about the format of this. I actually did the page counts this time. We got a 21-page story for Green Lantern, a 20-page story for Red Lanterns, for a total of 41 pages at $2.99. I suppose there was the risk of the a clerk at a store flipping it over and charging you $2.99 twice, but I don't think that would happen. So in terms of price point and whatnot, man, this was a bargain. And in terms of the actual story content, really, the big thing for me was stuff happened in this issue. I thought with the Green Lantern storyline, there were a lot of things going on. Not so much that it felt like chaotic or anything, but just like a full issue. And fuller than most that I'm reading these days, where it's like, yeah, we're just telling a little part of the story and you get the rest next month. This covered a lot of ground, and then I hit the halfway point of, oh, flip the issue and get the rest. And a lot happened there, too. I mean, there were, you know, three, four, or five different kind of plot lines or whatever going on, definite scene changes and things happening. And it felt just really substantial, and I really liked that. So all the way around, I was just really kind of blown away with the kind of the return on investment on this. And again, I'm not really a fan of flip books just in principle, but this was a really great use of one because the Red Lantern story really picked up right on the heels of the Green Lantern story. And it felt like I got 41 pages of a story that was really serving both Green Lantern and Red Lanterns equally well at $2.99. It's like, how can you go wrong with that?
You can't. It was great, a great idea. Would have never picked up a Red Lantern on my own. I do read Green Lanterns, Green Lantern, but I don't go into the other Lantern books.
How come?
I just don't have the time. I like the character, but I can't do all the core and all the other books. I
that's fair.
I just have to make some choices. And
so if this had been two separate issues,
never.
You would have only read the Green Lantern one?
Yeah. Yeah, and I would have just missed out. I would have sat that event crossover out, because I've done that before with other books.
It's really common. I noticed that trend a lot when I look at the sales. Batman will sell so much, Detective just so much less than that on a consistent basis, even when stories go through it. So something like Gothtopia, Death of the Family, stuff like that. Same thing with the Green Lantern franchise. Green Lantern is seen as the main one. Fewer people get the other books. Red Lantern, least of all. So you're not alone there.
Yeah, I like Vendetti. Since he took over Green Lantern, I like him. I like the Billy Tan art a lot in this. So it's really good. And you know, like you said, I mean, it's a good bargain. This issue was a great deal. And like I said, I would have not picked up this otherwise. And I like this idea. I like this idea of, hey, we really want to get folks to try this. Not only are we going to write a story that makes sense and that ties them together with something they're already reading, we're going to give it to them basically for free and hope that the story sells and then we get a new reader out of it. What a novel concept, you know, that they can they can give us something great, and we'll stick around.
Well, novel on multiple levels, because not only are they giving it away, but I mean they're putting their faith in their material by doing that. This is how I really think crossovers between titles and stuff like that ought to go. Other publishers back in the day, I think it was it Valiant? There was one publisher that did it a lot. Image, certainly, I think. I forget who it was. It was back in the 90s, and it got a little crazy or whatever, but what better way to get somebody to read another book than to essentially include it for free in something that they're already getting?
Yeah, and we got Charles Soule writing on Red Lantern. I don't know if this is his first book, has he been writing Red Lanterns?
I am not certain. I would have to go check somewhere.
Yeah, and then
I don't track creators particularly well.
So, you know, he's been doing some great work all over the place. You know, I think he's got 7 ongoing titles that he's writing. So he's a busy guy, but that bodes well for this Red Lanterns book. Alessandro Vitti on art, which I do not know if he's a regular artist either. But it was very good, and I got to meet Guy Gardner for the first time in a long time. I hadn't really seen that character in any kind of major way mm-hmm. since way back in the Justice League International days. So that was kind of cool. He's changed a lot.
Speaking of Justice League, Ice shows up here, and it's can he rekindle the romance with her or not sort of thing. The question I have, when did they date in the world of the New 52?
Yeah, I don't know that.
Because the Justice League's been around. It's been made clear that they had no other members than the main 7 other than Martian Manhunter. Justice League of America was created by the government very recently. There doesn't seem to have been other Justice League groups for Guy Gardner and Ice to have met through.
There was that 5-year period where...
True, yeah. But I guess we've got no indication that the Detroit League certainly could not have existed. We know did Justice League International, Europe, and any of those things, I mean, they almost couldn't have existed given other changes to the universe. So, I mean, it's not a big deal. They didn't even reference how they met, be it through the Justice League or whatever. I'm curious.
Yeah, I can't answer that.
I don't think there is an answer for that yet.
But I agree, this is a cool way to package this story and introducing me to Red Lanterns and thinking, hey, these are some cool characters. There's some cool stuff going on here. There's a lot going on here. There was a lot in both halves of the book going on mm-hmm. here. And it makes me want to carve out some more time and add some more Lantern books to spend some more time in this world. So it was a win-win for me. I really, really enjoyed this title.
So do you think you are going to start picking up Red Lanterns?
I think I am. I think I'm going to try to squeeze it in somewhere. I'll figure it out. Just spend less time with the family.
Yeah, of course. It's about the only choice sometimes. Yeah, there's so many of these comics to read. So what rating?
Oh, I'd definitely give it a 4. It was a solid 4, and you know, pound for pound, what a good buy. Great way to introduce me to another book in the family. They should do this more often. I encourage you to pick this up because we want publishers to do things like this.
Yeah.
Give us more.
Well, yeah, more, better value, and it's if they want to do the, let's see if we can cross-pollinate readers from one branch of the franchise to another, this is just an incredibly effective way to do it.
Let's do it this way. And not an event. Let's do it this way.
Well, yeah. A story that makes sense to involve both, a story that serves both, full stories for both halves of the flip book that are well told and full issues in and of themselves. They're not filler. I mean, for me, this was a very strong 4 out of 5. From a marketing point of view, they knocked it out of the park, and I really would like to see them do more of this sort of a thing, where it makes sense, with stories that make sense. And I think it was good that they did it from the best-selling title of the franchise to the least selling of the franchise.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense.
It'll be interesting to see how the sales of Red Lanterns does after this. But we won't know for another few months. But hopefully it'll give it a boost.
If it doesn't have an increase, I would be super surprised. I mean, it has to pay some dividends. Has to.
Well, I think so, but it may take a couple of months for that to kind of work its way into the numbers, because retailers have already had to order the next issue, or actually two, before they've had a chance to get really feedback on this one.
True.
So it comes down to how many people add it to their list, how quickly do they add it to their list.
How many stores still have it on the will have the Red Lantern, next issue of Red Lanterns on the shelf anyway? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that answer.
And also, you know, again, I tried to get a second copy through DCBS. I'm assuming it's because they've been taken over for mail order comics that they couldn't fill that. And it's, I think, back ordered through Diamond. But that implies there's a definite demand for this. So did they have even enough copies of this issue, much less enough copies of the next Red Lantern issues at various stores?
Right.
But I suppose a decent problem to have than getting stuck with too much material.
So really, it probably would have been a little better and better strategy for DC to do two of these. That would have given a little momentum and time for retailers to catch up.
I agree with you. I don't say the skeptic in me, but I'm wondering if they had done that, if retailers and various people online would have been up in arms of, well, they've cut back by a book for the month by merging the two. Is this permanent?
Mm-hmm.
How come I'm not getting the... But, I mean, the thing is, we didn't lose anything other than a $2.99 charge, which from a reader perspective is good. From a retailer perspective, I could see where they might be a little miffed about that,
yeah.
But play the long game here. The idea is to get more readers on more books, not just sell more this week.
Yeah, the publisher takes a short-term hit, retailer takes a short-term hit, but hopefully they add another title to an ongoing reader's pull list.
And at the end of the day, that should be the goal.
Yeah.
Hopefully it was successful and we'll do it again. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
Loki, Agent of Asgard, number one. The cover where they've got the Trust Me number one thing at the top and it's an actual number one at the bottom, I've still got some skepticism as to how well the Point Now thing's going to do, because I think this is confusing what's a real number one and what's a fake number one for people. I know Sam is a little bit, I don't want to say up in arms, but unamused by that, and rightfully so.
Yeah, it's really a number one. We're not joshing this time.
And it makes sense to kind of put that at the top, because you can't always see the bottom of the thing, but they shouldn't put the issue number at the bottom to begin with.
Yeah.
Their cover design needs work.
And I think Sam thinks that there will be some backlash from readers because of the shenanigans with the Point Now numbering, right?
Yes, and the reason I'm willing to say right now that he is correct on that, they've already backed down from the Point One numbering, because apparently it didn't work out. I'm not going to say there's backlash or whatever, but they've essentially replaced it with Point Now. So until they stumble across something that works or doesn't suck too badly, they're going to keep flipping it around and seeing what they can play with.
The next one will be Point, hey, look over here. Look at me. That'll
yeah.
be after every number.
give it time. We've got the Point Inhumanity, the Point You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
They're in there, in the planning stages.
The way this opened, with a full-page splash that was very provocative, and then here's the backstory on Loki. I thought was a really interesting way to do it. At first, I saw the splash. It's like, okay, come on, I don't buy this. This is a cheat, whatever. But then I read the page on Loki, and it's like, you know, this is a really good kind of a recap of his background, setting the tone, the style. It normally, this whole let's stop the thing for a two-page, you know, opening credits kind of a deal irks me, but it worked well here.
Yeah.
And then we get into the story, and they're just doing some fun stuff. I like this take on Loki. There was a few things with the interaction between Loki and Thor that I'm like, I don't know. But as I went through the story, it's like, okay, I get it. It makes sense, and it works. But man, this whole secret agent, spy, con man kind of a twist on Loki is fun, and it was one of those things that going into this, I kind of thought I knew what to expect from this title, and in many ways, it very much delivered on that. But then the end took what I thought was a really good issue, and just a fun start to the title, and man, just kicked it up a notch, and had me kind of rethinking where and what my expectations ought to be for this title. Because they did a few things, one or two things I totally did not expect, yet think they played fair with. This was something that was just really well written. And probably one of the best Marvel first issues in quite a while. And there's one other first issue I think it compares to, but I don't want to say which one out of fear of almost, I don't want to say spoiling something, but, yeah.
Okay.
I really like this.
Yeah,
How'd it work for you?
It was pretty good. Al Ewing's the writer, and the artist is Lee Garbett. I'm not familiar with his work, but Al Ewing's doing the Mighty Avengers as well. Mm-hmm. And I started off liking that book and kind of lost a little bit of steam for me. But I thought this was really good. I liked the art a lot. I like this youthful Loki character.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him over in Young Avengers, the even younger Loki over there. He was a lot of fun. This reminds me of that character a little. And I like that voice, and I think it's well done. And I really had a lot of fun with this book. It was like you said, it was just a fun read and a really interesting first issue. Good kickoff.
Yeah, I think it's a good follow-up from Young Avengers for people who like the character there. It's very much taking what they'd done there and just solo series now for the character. Essentially the trickster god as the archetypal trickster human, you know, con man, secret agent, that kind of a thing. I'm amazed they hadn't done that before, but I think prior to this young Loki, it wouldn't have worked. And, you know, I like this version of Loki. We've had him for a good number of years. He's really, well, actually, they've matured him from the really young Loki they had for a bit. I think they've really hit on a winning take for the character, and I want to see it stick around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always been some hesitancy for villain-led books, and it seems like maybe they're getting away from that, worrying about that as much now. Both DC and Marvel are kind of putting some of these kind of more villain-led books out, and I think that's going to pay dividends. I think they can actually hold their own.
Go
ahead.
I don't think this is a villain-led book. I think they've repositioned the character through Young Avengers and stuff to where this is a more of a rogue. I'm trying to think what privateer. Swashbuckler. Not a morally gray character, not a villainous character. Something like Gambit, the character of Sawyer from Lost. That kind of a character.
We got Punisher number one this week as well, and
more of an anti-hero.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But the Robin Hood types do the wrong thing for the right reasons. They've repositioned Loki in a very interesting way, and I think this story did a really good job explaining some fascinating ramifications and aspects of his status quo that just hadn't occurred to me, and I really like it. I want to see them play with. And I think this could make a great kind of companion title to Thor. I mean, they're half brothers. There's that connection. I don't want to see them necessarily cross over, but
that's inevitable.
It is. As recently as a few years ago, I don't know that I would have thought Loki could have carried a title, even when he was doing so over in Journey into Asgard or whatever, or Journey into Mystery featuring Asgard, whichever the title that had been Thor and he took over for a while. I forget the name. But this one, man, if they can keep up this quality, I think they can go for a while. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a very solid book. I enjoyed it. I'm going to read the next one for sure, and I gave it a 4.
Yeah, another strong 4 out of 5 for me. Moving on to our next book. It is Archer and Armstrong number 0. They've done another, Zero before, that one featuring Armstrong, this featuring Archer. It gets confusing after a while, you know, when they keep doing these number zeros. That's the number one, it is number zero. Anyways, I've been really looking forward to this issue since they did some of the preview pages in some of the other Valiant books. And what I liked about the zero issue last time around for Archer and Armstrong is we got a really good backstory for Armstrong that really made sense for it to be a zero issue. It takes place prior to the first issue. And then here we get kind of the same sort of thing, a really interesting and solid background for Archer that takes place before, well, it's got a framing sequence that puts it in current day, leading directly into the Archer and Armstrong versus Bloodshot and the Hardcore crossover. Yet most of what's happening is the backstory of Archer putting it before the number one of Archer and Armstrong, if that makes sense. I thought this was a lot of fun, great art, really liked the art style and stuff, liked how they, didn't dodge any bullets, didn't kind of hedge any bets or whatever. It's like, this is his backstory. Here's how he got to where he got. There have been a number of times other publishers have promised certain things and don't deliver. That I like that we got what I was expecting here. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was very good. It seemed like there were some direct lifts from that first issue of Archer and Armstrong. Some of the story beats or early origin stuff. It seemed like I had seen some of it before.
Well, some of it you had seen before. The first couple of pages, the first one, two, three, four, about first four or five, they'd done as preview pages and other issues.
Okay.
Which is part of why I was really interested about it, because the whole bit when he is in whatever they call that training room.
Yeah.
And they realize what Psyot power he's got. We'd seen before, and I'm like, to me, that was a game changer. It was a different take on the character, perfectly in line with what they've done, but it's kind of a, you just think it's this. But they explain Archer's thing, if you will. And, you know, it's really got me thinking, you know, he's going to be going up, he and Armstrong, against Bloodshot in the hardcore. And Bloodshot's essentially the Punisher mixed with a little Wolverine in terms of the nanites, the regeneration, all that kind of stuff. I don't know who would win between Archer and Bloodshot. And if they were to do a well-written, choreographed fight, I could actually see that going for a couple of issues and being a blast to watch. Just because it's not a showdown that's going to be a one-punch kind of a deal by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, I'm not saying I want to see a fight scene that goes on for issues and issues and issues, unless it's really well done. But it's got me rethinking the who's the alpha male, top dog, power-wise, or whatever, in the Valiant Universe.
Now, Fred Van Lente, did he write the last incarnation of Archer and Armstrong as well? Or is he a new writer to Valiant?
He might have done some of the older stuff. I am not certain.
Okay. Yeah, he's good. I really like his writing style a lot. And this art, is it Perry Perez? Is that how you say his name?
That's the art. I mispronounce his name.
It's really good.
Perry Perez, yeah. Nice. Really clean style.
Very clean.
It reminds me a little of Kevin Maguire, because there's a sense of expression, acting, and nuances. It's not aping his style, but it's better acted than most comics are, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
This artist could do almost, I don't say almost anything and I'd pick it up, but this would take for me a book that I was thinking, gee, do I want to stick with it or not? And I'd hang on to it just for the art. I mean, it's great storytelling. It's well done, clean style, a clear narrative flow. I mean, it's everything I could ask for out of an artist.
Yeah, this book is really good, and I'm woefully behind on it. I've got to get caught up, and it's really great. It's a really great book, and for me, I've been keeping up with Quantum and Woody, but this book seems a little better to me than Quantum and Woody. It just seems like a little better book. Both good, both a little different. But those are the two Valiants that I've read, besides the Bloodshot Zero issue and the Unity number one. And I really like Archer and Armstrong when I read it, and I've got to get caught up on this book. I'm about 10, 15 issues behind.
Yeah, definitely catch up on this. Are you going to be getting both sides of the crossover with Bloodshot?
I probably am not. I probably am not going to do the crossover.
Why not?
Well, like I said, I'm 10 to 15 issues behind on Armstrong.
I don't have time for this. How can I get
There's
another?
There's no way I can add another Valiant book.
That's fair. That would be the other one I would really recommend.
Bloodshot's the third.
Yeah. Bloodshot, because of the nature of his powers and whatnot, gets a little gorier, grosser than I tend to like. But it's a well-written book. It's an interesting book that, you know, it gets it a little more leeway on that kind of stuff, because it also it does fit the story, unfortunately, at least from my perspective. If it was something that I thought was just gross, disgusting, and I really didn't like the story, man, I'd drop it in a heartbeat. But they're just doing some great stuff kind of across the board. Archer and Armstrong, just wonderful book. Yeah, you've got to catch up on that.
I've got to catch up on it, yeah. Now, Valiant, how many properties does it have left from its stable? Is Ninjak still theirs? Is it coming out?
Oh, yeah. Ninjak is still theirs. He's over in Unity. There was talk of him getting his own book. I don't know what the game plan is on that.
But Turok, they lost Turok to...
Turok Magnus and Solar were gold key characters that the original Valiant used to kind of launch their universe.
Oh, okay.
So they were just borrowing them. They've since gotten a little time over at Dark Horse and are now starting up over at Dynamite. Yeah, Dynamite. Mm-hmm. But they've got Ryan the Future Force, which we may get over in Eternal Warrior, because that's taking place 2,000 years in the future. They've got Time Walker, Second Life of Dr. Mirage. They had a bunch of other titles. They've hit kind of the cream of the crop. Not that the other ones were bad. I loved Second Life of Dr. Mirage and stuff. I liked Ryan the Future Force. They've got enough that they can keep going for a little bit, but I think their plan is to stay in single-digit number of titles per month. So get up around 9, but not, like, you know, flood the market or anything.
What, do they have 6 or 7 now?
I think so. I think 7. I'd have to double-check. Actually, I've got my thing I use to track the ratings I'm giving everything, so let me see how many I've got on my list, because that should be all of them. Oh, I've got to not filter it by this week. That would kind of limit the list. I've got a total of 8. Archer and Armstrong, Bloodshot and Hardcore, Eternal Warrior, Harbinger, Quantum and Woody, Shadow Man, Unity, and Exo.
And then Unity had the big launch at 70,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it fallen back to?
Excellent question.
I know they had, some of their other titles have been struggling around the 10,000 mark. I didn't know how Unity was still leading the pack.
It is down around 13,275, I believe.
Doggone it.
It dropped quite a bit with the second issue. Is you kind of got to expect that.
Yeah, yeah. The 70,000 was an anomaly. That was a big number.
It was. It was. I think they're not quite at the point where they could support something like that. It's just so much head and shoulders above everything else they've done. But it's a shame because, I mean, they're telling great books.
These should be selling in the 20s. They should be selling twice what they're selling easily. I mean, the quality wise.
Based on the quality, certainly.
If they had an Image Eye on them instead of Valiant, you think their numbers would be higher?
Yes. Yeah. And that pains me to say, because I put more value in the Valiant brand than the Image umbrella. And I phrase it that way because Valiant's got a lot more control over who they have on which books and whatnot. Image is just literally an umbrella that they put their logo on and take the money and put the books out. I mean, they do a little bit more than that, but not tons and tons.
They're almost like eBay.
Yes.
You know, they're only as good as what everybody's selling.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And again, Image is doing some great stuff these days. But I think people who are really enamored with Image should take a look at the back half of Previews. There's a ton of similar great stuff there, too.
Yeah, they don't really have, like you said, they don't have the skin in the game. They've got, you know, they get their $2,500. And I was curious, too, how do the trades work, I wonder, for Image? Is that another $2,500 investment from the creators, or is that, at that point, created, controlled by the publisher?
Yes, to both. Image can say no, we're not going to do a trade. Not the right time yet. But then I think when it does happen, the creators pony up the money for that. I could be wrong, but based on what I've heard in a couple of cases, that definitely seems to be the case.
And because it's also curious about their pricing structure on their trades, because sometimes they take 4 issues, bundle them for $9. And sometimes they take the first 6 issues and bundle them for $9 or $14. There's really doesn't seem to be any kind of hard and fast rule.
No, there's not. I think the creators are involved in those decisions. It comes down to how big is the first story arc. But they're really good about pricing the first volume at a lower price, again, to get people's, you know, in the door.
And the Valiant do that with their titles and their first trades?
I'm getting everything in single issues, so...
So you don't even know, yeah.
Don't even know off the top of my head, yeah.
I'll have to take a look, see what the price point is on those.
Now, before we dive too much into all that kind of stuff much further, we probably ought to give our ratings for Archer and Armstrong, Archer and Reserve.
Did I not say a 4? It's a really good book. I enjoy it. I need to catch up. It's a 4.
Same here.
I have 4s across, straight across today.
Yeah, same here. It was a really good week for the picks we had. I'm really happy with that. It was great stuff to read. I have been kind of busy this week because the preview spotlight, as we record this, went up yesterday, which meant I had to actually, you know, edit everything and do all that stuff. Plus, the January numbers came out, so I spent Monday night crunching that, doing the article for that. Tuesday night, recording with Chris and stuff. So I have not gotten all the way through my stack. I've read a lot of things, but certainly I've got probably about half my reading list still to go for this week.
Can you give us a little sneak on what was the top seller?
Let's see. Yes, I can. I've got too many Excel spreadsheets open right now.
Breaking news.
Well, the top seller was the only seller over 100,000. It was Batman 27 with 415,492. Detective was the second bestseller with Detective 27, 88,702. Keep in mind, that was a $7.99 book. And both of those items had additional sales lower on the list for the combo edition, the print digital. Batman did another 1,903, and Detective did another 1,653 units. Between those two issues alone, DC sold more than most of the other publishers, other than, obviously, Marvel and Image, and I think IDW. But right around how much Dark Horse did in total.
That's amazing.
So, now, interesting stuff.
Historically, January is a down month. Issues. Did you say historically January is a down month? It's a low month.
Yeah, it is.
Is February also low, or will it pick back up?
Part of this also depends what's coming out. There have been a couple of years where January and February have not been low months because we've got, you know, major events going on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that this time. We've got Forever Evil, but it didn't actually have an issue come out in January. So it kind of skipped that. That'll give us a few items higher on the list next month for February. But usually the bigger months of the year are the summer months and like December. So,
well, it was, like you were saying, it was a solid week. Some other debuts we had. I was really pleasantly surprised by The Joker's Daughter, how much I didn't hate it. Because I thought I was going to hate that one. And it was not horrible, horrible trash. So that's a tacit endorsement, right?
How about we agree to disagree?
I actually thought it was so much better than the Villain Month issue and the Catwoman stuff with her. It was a lot better than that.
I'm not going to say it was a bad, horrible issue from an strictly objective point of view, because it was one that I really don't think I can honestly give an objective point of view on. The story did not work for me. I intensely disliked the character, a number of aspects of the story. The whole Joker's face thing, I think, is just disgusting. It took it to a whole new level here. There were parts of the issue that I just had to struggle to get through. I'm not the target audience for it. And it's the kind of story that just really illustrates to me how far comics have come from when I started getting into comics back in, 1979, 1980-ish, give or take, a little before that, right around that time. So that's, what, 35 years ago or whatever?
Yeah.
If the me that was getting into comics then had read this issue, I'd probably be a hardcore Marvel fan.
Yeah.
This would have really turned me off from DC in a big way. But it pushed buttons for me that I just didn't care for.
And if you have
this
parents...
This was such a disturbed character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're the parent of a daughter, like don't let her read it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because she's the character's a cutter. She's an actual cutter. And it kind of celebrates her cutting herself on various occasions throughout this. So that's not good for young girls to read a book like this.
Yeah, it was effective at what it set out to do. What it set out to do really turned me off.
And it's a one-shot.
This is something
so
that I'm
we won't have to see
I'm
it
giving
again.
It a 2 for my rating and stuff.
Oh, that's, yeah.
It just, yeah, that's as much how much I didn't like it as anything else.
Yeah, I wanted to give it a 0, but it got a little better than, the last time I saw her, this character, I hated it so much. And it didn't make me just want to run away in horror. So, but it's still bad. It's still not great. And I'm glad it's a one shot and not an ongoing series for sure.
I think we're going to keep seeing this character though.
Yeah, she might be a foil for some of the other bat family people, maybe, as a rogue for them, you think? Like a Batgirl?
Like a Batgirl, exactly, yeah.
Catwoman villain, maybe? Something like that. That makes sense. Maybe she'll work better in that, in smaller doses.
I would like to really test that theory to the extreme. How small of a dose can we get? None at all? I mean, I'll follow the character. I read everything from the New 52, but it's like they went out of their way of just how twisted can we make this kid?
Yeah.
And they succeeded.
Yeah, she's twisted.
Yeah.
Twisted. And we got a Punisher number one, Nathan Edmondson and Gerards, I guess the artist's name is. And I really liked it. It kind of picked up for me the momentum that I enjoyed with the two-issue mini.
Mm-hmm.
Punisher that we had earlier, and I like this debut. I like this character a lot. I like him in this world, and I like the kind of supporting cast that he has. You know, him hanging out in the diner with a little downtime, and not so. He has more of a personality in this than I've ever seen a Punisher.
Yeah, because normally he's very stoic, impossible to read. The Greg Rucka stuff did very much he's a man on a mission, and that played well. This is a bit of a different take, but not out of line with that take. The whole bit with the diner, stuff like that, yeah, it really humanized him a bit, and it looks like they're going to have, as much as he's hunting other people hunting him, and that, I think, is going to be a fun dynamic. I really enjoyed the issue. It was very solid. Glad they came out with it.
Oh, yeah.
I know there's some people that think the Punisher shouldn't be in the Marvel Universe. He's just a guy with a gun. But as he shows, when the guy's saying, "Oh, you can't break in there," it's like, I wasn't planning on it. You know? He's an intelligent guy and realizes he is just a guy in a gun with a world of gods, aliens, and superpowered people, you know?
Forever Evil number 5. We've got a couple more issues after this one. I enjoyed this one a lot. I enjoyed issue 5. It's just taken way too long to get from point A to point Z for me. I wish they could have got a few issues in the tank before they launched this thing, so they could have done maybe every 3-week accelerated schedule on this.
That would have been nice.
It's taking so long to get where we're going to go, and we've got, you know, books trying to, I mean, you know, keep in line with them, and their storylines aren't lining up, and
Imagine if they'd done every 3 weeks, like you said, okay? And then in between that, you had the 1 week that had two of the miniseries, another week that had two in the miniseries, but kind of in between that would be the Justice League issue or whatever. I mean, they really could have kept the momentum going.
Yeah.
And just really kept the story engaged versus, it does feel, I don't want to say a little dated, but, you know, I've been waiting since the end of Trinity War, which kicked this off, for there to be just a huge slugfest, essentially, the Justice League versus the Crime Syndicate. And this feels like, while it's a good read, a fun read, I'm liking what we're getting, we're not getting that. And that was very much my expectation. It feels like a 6 or 7 issue build-up to that. And it means that 7th issue, they really got to kind of knock my socks off if I'm waiting that long to get what I thought I'd get with the first.
Well, and then we're getting the some of the solicits. We've got a Forever Evil Aftermath issues that are happening as well, and so I don't know. It's just going to keep dragging and keep extending, and I don't know. I hope we get the payoff. I really do, because I've enjoyed the issues. It just they just take forever.
I think it comes down to the pacing should have been faster on the release schedule. They should have set our expectations a little bit better. Because again, what they've got is good, but I think it's leaving at least the two of us wanting a little bit, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. We got a Wolverine book that looks very similar to the Wolverine book we already had just a scant few weeks ago. That book ended, and this book began with a number one, and Paul Cornell is still the creator on it. I don't get it. I do not get it at all. It smells of nothing but a cash grab to me. There is no reason in my mind, creatively, that this book needed to be rebooted. Nothing changed.
Relaunched.
Yeah, relaunched.
To me, a reboot Renumber. Is they actually change the character's history or whatever.
Yeah, he's exactly the same. He's still killable. They're just renumbering him. And it almost like they're reusing the same cover from the first issue last time, about a year or so ago. It's really ridiculous. and it makes no sense to me. I cannot wrap my mind around what they're trying to do here except pump up inflated numbers, you know, unsustainable imaginary numbers.
Well, first issue sell is the belief, and therefore if you want something to sell, relaunch. Now, what that belies, and I'm sure Sam and I will talk about this some, is part of why first issues sell, multiple cover gimmicks that are thrown on them, and the promotional push it gets. If this had been a Wolverine whatever point now, it would have gotten a promotional push, but not as big as this. People wouldn't have noticed it necessarily as much. Although, again, as we were talking about with the Loki Agent of Asgard, the number one up in the corner there in the upper right, same thing with Wolverine, it's blurring that line. That's intentional. I think it comes down to, is there a story in name in front of that number one or not?
Mm-hmm.
That would be the clue. But definitely a renumbering gimmick to get the sales, and it continued from the previous series without missing a beat. No change whatsoever in status quo, creative team, character, tone, style. I mean, or if they were effectively, you know, negligible.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and I liked the issue, but I don't respect the marketing move.
Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite Marvel books is doing the same shenanigans with Daredevil. You know, I'm going to lose Daredevil for a second and get it back. I think they're changing locales, maybe?
Yes, he's moving coasts.
He's moving coasts, which doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess that's the reason to renumber.
No, the reason to renumber is they can.
They can.
I mean, it's been 3 years. Why not renumber? It's been a year for Wolverine. Let's renumber. They are thinking the season mode, story arc, second story arc, relaunch. And I think that is detrimental to sales. I think that is a bad idea. And I think it's going to have diminishing returns in short order.
I mean, I would almost, you could almost see readers saying, well, I don't care much for this one. I'm going to sit this one out. I'll catch it on the next renumbering.
Yep.
You know, I'll wait a year when they start it over again.
They've gone from every issue way back in the day being a jumping on point to the start of every story arc being a jumping on point, and now they're pushing it towards the start of every volume being the jumping on point.
Pick up number one or don't.
Yep.
But I mean, I do kind of get it, I guess, in a little, sort of, because I am scared of some books that have been around for a while, like Fables. You know, I haven't been able to jump on that one because of just how far it's gone. It's in the hundreds right now, right?
But do you feel the need to jump on where it is currently, or just start at the beginning with the trades?
I would have no problem just doing that. But
that's
I don't,
how you should do it.
I don't want to. I don't want to pick up now and lose all that. You know, I think I need to start back at the beginning.
Well, I think Fables, Walking Dead, anything that's got kind of that continued story since the beginning, you're doing yourself a disservice to not follow it from the beginning.
Whereas you don't really lose anything by that last Paul Cornell series. Don't bother. There's no reason.
Well, I think superhero comics are should be written in the never-ending battle kind of mindset. It's like when you move to a new town, going back to when people listen to radio, because obviously everyone's listening to podcasts now, and I fully support that. Anyways. You know, I would get to college. I, you know, it's like, I got to find a radio station. You know, let's see what the morning, you know, team is like here, whatever. Not that there's radical differences between some morning teams, but supposing there were. I don't feel the need to go listen to everything they've ever done since the beginning because I'll be lost of all their gags, their in-jokes, their running stuff. No, you can jump on anywhere and jump out anywhere. Comics should be kind of like that, you know. You can watch The Daily Show and just kind of pick it up whatever. Yes, there's things that repeat, motifs, styles, and he references previous stuff, whatever. You shouldn't feel the need of, wow, you know, I really just can't get on. I'm trying to think of any title that has an issue number over, say, 100 that's not like Walking Dead, Fables, or whatever. But, you know, like Detective back 3-4 years ago before the New 52.
Yeah.
Action. Nobody, I think, was thinking, well, I've got to read all 900 previous issues of Action to understand this one. Nah. So I get the fear of the big number, but I think it is psychosomatic and not real in so much as it's not the big number that's the problem, it's the lack of accessibility. We talked about Serenity Leaves on the Wind last week. You found that somewhat inaccessible. and certainly unengaging, I think is an accurate description of how yes. you felt about it. Technically, I think it was accessible, but it was one of those things. It was a first issue. You know, it's not like you had hundreds and hundreds of things to go catch up on. Really, in the span of a really long viewing day, you could have watched everything to get up to speed on that. So you were one day shy of being totally up to speed. But there is that perception, a high number, ooh, scary, it's off-putting. I don't buy that. I mean, I don't buy that it ought to be that way. I certainly get and buy that people feel that way. And I understand it, but don't think... I think it's a failing of the writers, not of the longevity of the title.
Yeah, and a couple years ago when DC launched the New 52, I got it. You know, I was like, I get it. I get what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is cool. I'm on board. This is neat. And then Marvel, now they're doing their little... It's a different animal, and I understand that, but then they started doing all their renumbering, and I wonder if this is going to put any pressure on DC to say, well, we can't just... We're going to have to do this again. I hope they don't renumber again.
I don't think they will, because while Marvel's doing those renumberings, relaunchings with the Marvel Now stuff, it seems like at times people are slamming DC for, wow, look at how many of the original Wave 1 titles have gone away. That if they were to try to relaunch, renumber those, they would be seen as, I don't say as failing in some regard, but it would be a loss of face. Witness the fact Green Arrow got an in-place retooling when Jeff Lemire came on. Batwing got an in-place retooling when they replaced the lead character and creative team. Superboy just got one when they replaced the lead character and Marv Wolfman took over writing it. They're trying to shore up things and keep it going, yet...
Which we both wholeheartedly endorse. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, but if it was Marvel's decision-making process, all three of those would have been brand new number ones.
Or Point Nows. Point Ones. They probably would have been renumbered, you're
Green
right.
Green Arrow, maybe a Point Now. The others, because it was a new character, I would have expected a full number one. But either way, different rules at the different publishers, different mindsets, really, at the different publishers. And it kind of sort of makes sense, kind of sort of doesn't.
I think we should boycott reviewing any books that are just blatant renumberings.
You mean the first issues or the whole title?
Well, let's not get crazy.
I was going to say, we'd be out of titles really quick.
The first ones. Let's not do the number ones if they're fake.
I don't know. Sometimes it's fun doing the last issue or the first issue of one that we know is going to relaunch, just to, does it really need to or not?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I've been amazed how many of the titles I'm getting are doing this kind of retooling, relaunching, repositioning, whatever you want to call it, and the speed they're doing it with. Because I've filled out the file, the Excel file I use for, you know, putting my numeric reviews and everything I'm reading this year with all the titles that I've got something for this year or have stuff on order and expect to get this year. Again, I'm leaving out, you know, Image United and other fictional titles, and fictionally published titles, I should say. Got to be a better word for that. Anyways, the number of titles I've got coming and going is crazy. As of this week, the shipping week of February 5th, I've had 20 titles launch, another 22 titles end. In 6 weeks, I mean, that's 24 new, 24 out, almost. Certainly by next week, I think it'll get to that point.
And 22 started, 22 ended?
22 ended, and that may change as I read stuff and realize, oh, wait, that did end. There have been a couple times I've had to reassess, because, again, I haven't read everything, so this may be the last issue of some title, and I just haven't remembered or realized that yet.
This is your analogy of a forest of dying trees.
Exactly.
Holy smokes, that's a lot of ending titles.
Yeah, 20 new ones to replace it. So I'm down two by their choice, not mine. At least I think that's right. Anyways, it's around there. I've got to double check one or two things. The longevity of titles is not doing well. If titles don't stick around, they can't build an audience. It's crazy. You know, again, I liked the Wolverine number one. I don't think it needed to be a number one. I'm sure I'll like the Daredevil number one when it comes out. Or the X-Men, Wolverine and the X-Men number one when it comes out. But they've got so much rotation on this. And, you know, when Sam and I were talking about the year-end numbers, he was thinking that I should be kind of counting the transition between like the old Wolverine and the new Wolverine titles, because otherwise I'm not counting the what he thinks should be considered an advance on this new number one of sales. Yet I'll count the declines all the way down. But, I mean, to me, I don't think I'm overcounting it, because if I were to flip the order of the books and the sales, I would be counting the same thing as advances as I would be declines due to the reverse order, etc. In other words, I think I'm being fair, but he's got a valid point.
They ended the book. You didn't end the book for them. They ended the book, therefore it's over. You can't count it, the next issue as an advance on a book that has ended.
I can see maybe considering it transition or something. Do they lose or gain on a transition? But that gets so murky because this week Ms. Marvel number one came out. Is that a transition from Captain Marvel? But wait, she's getting her own book, or is that a miniseries? How does this work? You know, it's unclear to me how...
There are only a handful that work that way. Superior to Amazing Spider-Man makes sense. There's not a lot that make that. You know, the Wolverines would make this, you know, the same jump.
I need to do a little digging around on the Marvel stuff to see what sort of percentage, high, low, medium it is, because they're really the big offenders in this area.
Yeah. Do you think this puts pressure on a publisher like Valiant, who's getting in, you know, they've got titles in the 20s now, getting long in the tooth. do you think it puts a pressure on them to look young and fresh and accessible to readers coming in, seeing it on the shelf? That they feel internal pressure to renumber?
I hope not. I would think they would be better off staying with the higher numbers and making it seem like they're the established ones to the people not in the know. I mean, because really, that's the only ones it would almost apply to.
My only argument to that would be Unity came in, did monster cover gimmicks, blew up. It's a lot of money for a little publisher. 70,000 copies really probably pads their bottom line.
True.
So if they kind of fall into this renumbering game and can add some variant covers
That was a positioned as if it were a big event. It was certainly a crossover of all their properties or most of their properties.
Right, right. But they're running out of properties to launch.
I don't think so. I think they've, again, got another half dozen easily just out of what I can remember off the top of my head, and they've got plenty of new things they can create too. They're not limited to just what had been published before, you know, so to say they're running out of properties, I think is faulty logic.
They're running low on properties.
Not even, well, that's again assuming they're limited to what they've published before.
Yeah, yeah. And what they can sustain based on selling 9,000 copies of a title a month. I don't know what their business model is, but you would think that they would need that infusion of big cash to help their bottom line.
The impression I got talking to one of their guys at San Diego this past year was they're doing in line with how they were expecting, maybe a little better, whatever. So they're not needing that cash infusion that they got from Unity, but I don't know, maybe that was part of their plan too. I don't know.
Well, at San Diego, they were doing 15,000 a month, weren't they?
Yes, but I think they are realistic enough business people and have been following the numbers enough to kind of know that sales usually go down. So if they hadn't been planning for that, I would be surprised. But what they were requesting out of retailers is, you know, if you're ordering 10, try 11. Give us another percent. Give us an incremental increase. Not we want to double our sales, not we're going to fly through the roof, but we want to build slow, steady, and strong. And I think that was the right approach, the right message, and I think that's what they've been doing. I don't think they should be feeling any pressure to renumber to low issues. I don't think they should be saying, wow, we got that on a first issue with Unity, let's do that again. Do I think they're going to do some things that are either cover gimmicks or other things to boost the numbers or whatever? Yeah, sure. I mean, again, we're getting another crossover. That's something that's good sales juice. But they're not doing it in isolation from the stories and the content. They're focusing on the quality of their books and keeping the volume and number of titles and whatnot manageable.
I think it also depends on their talent costs. I mean, if Fred Van Lente wants a raise, if James Asmus wants a raise after he directs, isn't he directing Guardians of the Galaxy? If these guys want more than they're getting, how are they going to, they're not going to be able to afford that. And then you start losing the creators that make the books what they are, and your quality suffers.
depending who you replace them with. Fred Vigilante is a very talented writer. He's been around the block for a bit and not new to the game. He was a great choice. He is a solid talent and not one of those superstars. Geez, you're going to have to pay what kind of a page rate? I mean, I'm sure he's... Would he like a raise? Yeah, I'm sure he would. But he's affordable talent, yet not overpaid, underpaid, or whatever, not knowing what he's paid. You know, I guess
yeah,
what I'm saying
know,
is...
I don't know what that is.
They're not going after Jim Lee's, Brian Michael Bendis, Brian K. Vaughan, you know, the big names, the superstars. You know, they're going for solid talent. They're going, I would hope, kind of going to the baseball analogies. Was it the Oakland A's that kind of first really...
Moneyball, yeah.
Really adopted, yeah, the sabermetrics. Let's find the ones that are undervalued and solid performers. Let's go with them. And if it gets to the point where, you know, somebody gets, hey, I want a lot more money, and it's beyond what their sales and their budget can justify, they'll find somebody else who's more affordable, more in line with both what they want to do creatively and what they can afford to do.
And when they bring that creator on, they need to renumber the book.
No, I don't think so. I think that'd be a mistake. I think they are not far from being able to say that they've got solid ongoing books that have had, you know, continuous runs and storylines longer than Marvel and DC.
Yeah, and they are doing it differently than, say, an Image, because they have a shared universe and they're doing a much more complicated job. You know, they're like you said, they're just an umbrella. Image is like an umbrella pushing this stuff out. They don't have to worry about continuity and stuff like that. So it's much more difficult what Valiant is doing.
Yeah, it's a different ballgame over at Image. And even they are I don't say stooping to gimmicks, but, you know, there's a new writer taking over for Invincible with issue 111. They got the guy who's writing Walking Dead to write Invincible.
What?
I know. He happens to also be the creator of Invincible and the guy who's been writing it the whole time. But now, the writer of The Walking Dead's writing that book. I mean, look at the solicit.
It's like a first issue, really.
It's like three first issues in one. It's issue number 111.
Didn't you say a few months ago that at some point somebody's going to renumber an issue halfway through an issue, or reboot an issue halfway through an issue?
I've always thought that would be a hilarious thing to do. And
maybe you're going to get it with
might be seeing
Invincible
it there.
111.
Kirkman knows what he's doing. He's playing the hype game and whatnot, and more power to him, because it's funny how well Walking Dead does and how not so well in comparison Invincible does. And he's not that much better of a writer on one than the other. You know, Walking Dead is selling around 65,000. Invincible's around like 12, 13. So, world of difference there. Same writer.
Lightning strikes sometimes.
Yeah. I think he's frankly been telling a better story in Walking Dead. But not to say he can't do that in Invincible, and who knows, maybe he will be.
I read the first story arc of Invincible, and I thought it was really good.
The first two got it off on a good, solid footing with an anything can happen kind of a feel to it, but it lost that, hang on, it's going to be a bumpy ride kind of a feel a while ago.
Yeah.
And frankly, Walking Dead did for a little while too, but I think it's gotten that back.
Some great clips this week on the preview spotlight, and I believe the online solicitations are starting to trickle out, and maybe already are out by the time this goes up, correct?
If they're not out, they should be any time now. Yeah, because Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, IDW, all of those go up, certainly on comic book resources and other sites. At the latest, that would happen as of the day this episode goes up. So it would be Monday the 17th, maybe the 18th, because Monday's a holiday. Yeah, if you want to send in clips based on the online solicits, that's fine. For the naming convention, don't worry about the page number. Just put like the P000 dash, you know, Detective Comics number or whatever the hell the number would be, you know, and dash your name or whatever. It's the same naming convention. I can fill in the number. But if you do
if it's
that...
it's a small publisher, you might want to fill the publisher on there to help John out. Like,
yeah.
If it's a Titan comic book or something, you know, he might recognize the title, he might not. It helps him out if you if you throw the publisher on there, he can kind of fit it in to the layout of the episode that way.
Yeah, because I put them into the order they're in previews just because I figure that's the order people would be filling out their order form, and it's how I do it.
Yeah. But there's a very, you know, there's a very finite window of time between when previews launches. I think it's the 26th.
Yes. Right?
26 previews is out. If it's shipped to you, you've got a couple days wait there. And then you've got about a week or so, a long week, maybe 8 days, 9 days to get those clips in if you want to use the print previews copy. So get it, devour it, get those clips in as quickly as you can. Or you can start doing it right now by just taking a look at some of the online solicitations, fire some of those in and, you know, post them on the forum so nobody doubles up on you. But sometimes that's cool too when more than one person likes the same thing and really wants people to get on board with that title. That's kind of cool too. I'd like to hear different takes on what those titles are.
Yeah, it was funny because I was going through the current previews and flipping through Dark Horse, and I saw Pariah, and it's like, you know, that one looks interesting. Should I get it? But it didn't have enough information in the solicit, but it was interesting enough that I figured, oh, it's a third issue. How did I miss the first two? Let me go get those other previews, flip through it. It's obviously telling a story arc throughout the whole thing. So the other two solicits were just almost rewordings of the one I just read for number three. So I'm still undecided on that one.
I should wait for the trade now.
Eight issues, so I don't know. I think it's... Anyways. That's one that I wish somebody had sent a clip in on to get me excited and figure out if I should get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I find some great stuff all the time, so...
Yeah. Totally. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That will do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Royals, Masters of War number 1 from DC Vertigo, She-Hulk number 1 from Marvel, and Bunker number 1 from Oni Press.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.